Today's presenter is Thomas Serrano. Thomas joined the Debug Tools development team in 1997 and later joined the Level 2 support team, Fabrication and Integration Middleware, in 2002 with a concentration on Debug Tools. At this time, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Thomas.
Good morning. Thank you very much for attending this class. I'm Tom Soriano, as Elijah explained, and I do work in the Level 2 support for the Debug Tools product. And what I want to talk about today is one of the more common problems that we've seen for our Debug Tool users. And what I want to start out with is I want to just explain that Debug Tool is really more than just a diagnostic tool for analyzing application problems. It really is an execution environment, and as such it has sensitivities and interactions to subsystems like CICS, IMS, and DB2. It works with applications that are that use interlanguage interfaces. It works with programs that are LE-enabled and non-LE-enabled. It works in client-server configurations that involve VTAM and TCP, Windows clients, et cetera, et cetera. So what happens is that one of the most common problems with using Debug Tool is that Debug Tool is not starting for your program. It could be the main program, or you could bring it up and then find the Debug Tool isn't stopping for your sub-program. So what I want to do in this presentation is review and highlight some of the more common areas that customers have had problems with starting their Debug Tool. I want to say up front that I really regard this presentation as kind of like a large checklist. So what I want to do is I want to really just highlight the various areas. The low-level details are explained very thoroughly in the various documentation, and I will point that out through the course of this presentation. At the end, we'll have a brief summary and then move on to questions and answers. So let's move on to page 3, please. Now, as I said earlier, there are many causes of why Debug Tool doesn't really start for your program or your subroutine. And so what I want to start out with is to list the general categories of problems that I'm going to be discussing today. Please move to page 4. We're going to just start with the really basic setups, like, you know, registration and compiling your program with tests. And then we'll go into a little bit more involved discussion about passing the LE test runtime parameters in, you know, the various environments like CICS and IMS. And then what we're going to do is we're going to look at some specific problems involving subsystems and protocols such as VTAM and TCP/IP. And then we'll conclude with a quick word about maintaining your PTFs for Debug Tool. So at this point, we'd like to move on to page 5. Now, I should point out that some of the problems that I'm going to describe may seem painfully obvious, especially to you experienced Debug Tool users, but I'll tell you what the reality is that I've seen is that you know, customers will have many, many LPARs. They'll have test systems, development systems. They'll have production systems. Their IT sites will be spread out all over the country, all over the world, actually, in many different geographical areas. And so, for example, if they want to do a migration from, like, ZOS 1.4 to 1.9, there's a fair chance that some of these basic setup problems can fall through the cracks. So, again, I just want to quickly highlight them. I won't go into low-level detail, but they are areas to just, you know, check off your list in case you're seeing problems starting the Debug Tool. So one of the first categories I want to talk about is just registering the product. So let's move on to page 6. Okay, on this chart, all I do is I provide a quick reminder of some of the basic points to remember about registration. Now, again, this is all documented in very fine detail in the program directory, chapter 6 specifically. And also, be aware that with Debug Tool, there are two program directories. There's one for the base product, and there's one for utilities and advanced functions. And I understand that if you purchase the utilities and advanced functions product, that the base code is also shipped with that. So you will be installing both products. Now, in my chart here, I have a little Palm Live example. Now, this is version 7, but the latest version of eBook Tool is version 8, but I just cite this as an example. Basic things, you know, watch out for errant blanks or missing punctuation marks, etc. Once you've made that update in your Palm Live, make sure that you activate the Palm Live using the set prod command. And also, it's a good idea to just double check using the display prod statement that I have in my example at the bottom, and make sure that you see that the letter E, which stands for enabled, appears in the left-hand column. Okay, let's go on to page 7, please. Now, again, this may seem rather obvious, but I'll tell you what I've seen is that, pardon me, we have certain customers that have, I guess, automated build systems, and these build systems will build, you know, thousands of modules, and customers will have these on-site interfaces that can hide the specifics of the compiles from the end users. So what I've seen is that customers will come and to IBM, and they'll say, well, I'm debugging. I really want to debug program 87 of my 100 CSEC program, and debug tools and starting on that CSEC. And what we find out is that it wasn't compiled with test, and we kind of scratch our head, well, you know, how did you miss that? And then they go to their system administrator, and they find out that maybe there was some kind of setting that was done in the background that the end user wasn't aware of. So, again, it's not necessarily a frivolous concern, but it's certainly something that you just wanted to check off your list. So let's move on to page 8. Now, again, I'm not going to go into low-level details with this. What I've done on this chart is I've just listed the most common 3GLs that debug tool customers use, and some common examples of the test compile parameters that they use. Again, these are all very well documented in the language programming and users guides. And I also added to this presentation an appendix. At the very end of your package, what I've done was I have cut and pasted the syntax charts of the test parameters from the various programming books and put them all together into one single section. So hopefully that will be of use to you. Before we go off this chart, though, I'd like to just make one comment about COBOL 4.1. I know you COBOL users probably know this already, but for COBOL 4.1, the test compile option is different from the Enterprise version 3 syntax. For example, the sim parameter, which was used to define the symbol table, is no longer in the 4.1 syntax. Also, there is an EJPD, no EJPD option. This is used with the optimize option for COBOL, and it is used to enable the jump to and go to commands of the debug tool product. Okay, let's talk about assembler now. Let's go on to page 9. Now, assembler, of course, is a special situation. There's a very unique preparation that's done in order to debug an assembler program. And so what I've done here is I've attached an example that shows some of the main steps for preparing an assembler program for debugging, i.e., assembling with the A data and object parameters, as you can see in the second line of my example in the parm keyword. And also, it's very important to build the EQALangX file. It's analogous to a sysdebug file for COBOL and PL1 folks. And this is the file that contains all the debugging data. Now, this is a separate step. If you take a look at my example, there is an extract statement. I think it's about the fourth line of my example. And it's a separate exec step in which you have to run the EQALangX utility in order to create that side file. Okay, now we're going to go into a little bit more involved subject right now. If we move on to page 10. Now, one of the main reasons that debug tool does not start is that the test runtime parameters have not been properly passed, so debug tool doesn't know it's supposed to start. Now, these test runtime options are described very thoroughly in the LE customization guide and also the debug tool reference. And what I'd like to do is just show some of the basic areas to look into if you see that the customer, if you see that debug tool is not starting for your customer. So let's get started by moving to page 11. And on page 11, I just listed the main categories I'm going to discuss in this particular section. The LE test runtime options can be passed if you are calling the program in the foreground through a TSO call command, or from the background if you are invoking your program through a batch JCL job. There are also LE defaults that can be set up so that your entire, so that all the users in your region or are affected. And also there are special user exits that you can use to link to your application to pass these LE parameters. So let's get started by moving to page 12. On page 12, what I have here are the examples of the TSO call and the JCL parameter here. And you can see in the first example that the test runtime options follows the name of the load module and the program that you want to debug. And in the second example, you see that the test parameters are specified in the parm keyword of the exact statement. I should apologize. The last line regarding the runtime option data set is extraneous. I do have a separate chart later on in my presentation regarding the runtime option data set. So we'll discuss that in just a few moments. So at this point, let's move on to page 13. Now, on page 13, I just want to point out a rather common syntax error regarding the test runtime option. There is a forward slash symbol that's used to separate the LE runtime options from the program's input parameters. Now, for COBOL, be sure that the forward slash precedes comes in front of the test keyword. For all other languages, the forward slash has to come after the test keyword. And, you know, especially check in batch JCL jobs that the forward slash is in the proper position. Okay, let's go to page 14. Now, starting with this chart, we're going to get into the various exits. And there are two categories of exits that I'm going to talk about. The first category on this page, the common thread is that they all use the CEEXOPT macro to define the LE runtime parameters. Now, the XOPT macro is described in detail in the language environment documentation. There is also a very, very good chapter in the programming guide called Specifying Runtime Options, which provides an exhaustive and detailed description of all the many, many different ways that the LE runtime options are passed. But in this case, we're just talking about the XOPT variations. And what you see in my chart here, you see a bunch of names here. And what these are various exits that you can use in various situations. For example, I've got the CEE DOPT and the COPT, which runs out of your ski run data set to define the LE parameters at installation time. There is also a CEE ROPS, which runs out of your user-defined library, and that can affect a region, for example, your CICS region and an IMS region. But also there is a CEE UOPT, which you can tailor and link directly to your application to pass the LE parameters. And speaking of the application, let's move on to page 15, where we see that the LE parameters can also be passed from within a program. And I have two examples here. One is C++ using the pragma statement, and a second example of PL1, which uses a keyword PLIXOPT. And with this keyword, my understanding is that the PL1 compiler will actually generate a CEE UOPT when you code with this keyword. Now, like I said, there are many other ways that these LE parameters can be passed. CICS, for example, has a transaction called CLEAR, C-L-E-R. Also, there is a DD card called CEE Ops, which can be used to pass LE options. So let's continue with page 16. Now, the previous examples, as I stated, use the CEEXOPT macro to define the LE parameters. The second category of exits uses a macro called the CEEBXITA. And what you do in this macro is you specify a data set that contains the LE parameters, and also you can specify a message level parameter, which will control how much diagnostic output that you see. Now, in Debug Tool Utilities, there is an ISPF interface that's provided to define this data set, the data set that contains the LE parameters, and that's what I was referring to earlier as the runtime option data set. Again, this is provided if you have installed the Utilities and Advanced Functions, and it's in option 6. The default name is user ID dbgtool.eqa.uops, and again, this is the data set that you would specify in your exit, the CEBXITA exit. So let's go on to page 17. Okay, this chart basically summarizes my previous comments about using a CEBXITA and how it allows you to specify the data set name that contains the parameters and the message level. And again, be sure that you have Utilities and Advanced Functions in order to use the utility for managing the options data set. Let's go on to page 18 now. Now, on page 18, I have listed some of the exits that are shipped with the Debug Tool product. And as you can see in my chart, they correspond to various subsystems like CICS and DB2. Now, there is one little exception here. If you are debugging in an IMS Plex environment, IMS already provides its own exit. It's called DFSBXITA. And for information about this exit, you need to go into the IMS customization guide for more information about that. Okay, let's move on to page 19. Now, the top half of this chart I really provide as a reference. I won't go into a lot of detail on it, but suffice it to say that depending on certain variations of certain combinations of CADP, DTCN, your CICS level, and your PL1 level, you may not need to link the EQAD-CCXT for a CICS program. My understanding is that after you've defined your DTCN and CADP profiles, that you'll be able to pass those LE parameters already. And I'll be talking about DTCN and CADP a little bit more in this presentation. Now, one word of caution. If your site already has its own CEEBXITA, it already has defined for your site certain LE settings, and you don't want to overlay those settings. So what you need to do is be aware of what your site is using in its BXITA and merge those specifications with your user exit, for example, DDCXT or any of the other ones that I listed previously on page 18. So that's just something to be aware of. Now let's move on to page 20. Now on pages 20 and 21, I'm going to talk about those two CICS transactions that you use for defining the debugging profile. In CICS, there are two transactions. One is called DTCN. This is shipped with the Debug Tool. And there's another one, a newer one called CADP, C-A-D-P, which is shipped with CICS. And as I said, these transactions are used to define the debugging profile. But for the purposes of this presentation, what I want to do is highlight the sections that define the LE parameters. And I'm starting with DTCN. Now, this dialog is presented if you press the PF9 key, the options key. And as you can see, the test option test, all those parameters there, these will be used to create a test string that is going to be used to tell LE and debug tool what to do during the debugging session. I'd like to just note at the very bottom there is a field called Any Other Valid LE Options. This it's just a side note, really. This is very commonly used by customers that are getting some kind of an abend in CICS, and they need to generate a SysM dump. And it's in this field that any other valid options that you specify the options like, you know, abnormal termination of enclave or the termination of thread action, trap on, things like that. So I just put that out as a note because sometimes when customers have difficulty generating SysM dumps, we want to take a look at what they've specified here. So let's talk about CADP now. Let's move on to page 21. Okay, again, here's an example of the CADP dialog for defining the LE options. And as you can see, you have to press PF5 to create LE option in order to get this dialog. You see a lot of similarities to DTCN that I spoke of earlier. And again, at the bottom, there's the other LE options for generating any additional options for purposes such as generating SysM dumps. Okay, let's move on to page 22. Now, with these LE exits, there are actually three ways that you can use them when you build them for your program. The SAQA mod load library that is shipped with Debug Tool has defaults of some of these of these exits, and you can link these directly with your application, but if you do that, what you're doing is you are assuming that your LE runtime options dataset has the default name of userid.dbgtool.eqaUops. That's why I mentioned that earlier, because if you're using a different name, well, you're going to have to go on to the second option, which is to use the sample source programs that are shipped in the SEQA SAMP data set. And what you do with these is that you edit these assembler programs, you assemble them, and then link those with your application load module. The other option is, again, with these SEQA SAMP source programs, you can link them with your CEEB init or CEEPIPI modules, but there is a precaution that I want to highlight. Also, I think I should make a comment about the look and feel of this presentation. You might notice that some of the bullets don't look quite right. That's supposed to be numeric bullets, but unfortunately, they don't necessarily look quite right on this tool. I understand from Elijah is that if you take a look at the, I guess it's the Adobe PDF, file, that you will see that the bullets and the indentations should be correct. So I just say that as a side note. But let's go back to the presentation on page 23. Now, because CEB init and CEPIPI are used throughout your region, it's often very wise, in fact, highly recommended that you segregate your customized versions from the ski run that that your system uses. So what we recommend is to make sure that you use a separate data set for your customized init and PIPI that is separate from ski run and step live to that separately. Another warning is that if your site decides to upgrade their language environment package, for example, if you migrate to a newer version of ZOS, it's very likely that you're going to have to refresh your CEB init and CEPIPI in order to avoid any conflicts with the new level of ski run. And we've seen some pretty difficult problems that turn out to be errant versions, back-level versions of init and pipi that are, say, in your system link list or LPA, or they're hidden in some other data set with a non-obvious name to it. So be very, very careful if you link with a CB init and pipi. Now, why would you do that? The advantage of doing that is that you don't have to keep relinking your application every time you change it. So there are pros and cons, but I just want to highlight that to you. So let's go on to page 24. Now, the debug tool utilities also provides a facility, we call it the setup utility, DTSU, which is used to invoke your program for debugging. And one of the options in that dialog is to select the language option. And one of the reasons why some customers are unable to start their programs is because they have selected the incorrect option for their application. We'd spoken earlier about the forward slash symbol, and these options will, you know, generate the proper syntax depending on which one you select. But again, it's a good idea to take a look at the string that DTSU generates for you, and looking at the position of the forward slash is a very good check to see that you've selected the correct option. Also, if you're debugging a non-LE program, be sure that you select option 3, because there's another utility, and we'll talk about this later on, called EQANMDBG, which is used to debug a non-LE-enabled program. Okay, let's move on to page 25, please. Okay, we're going to have to say a few words about DB2 now. If you wanted to, and again, this is a continuation of the DTSU discussion from the previous page. If you want to debug a DB2 program, be sure that you select this option, the initialize setup file for DB2, so that the correct DB2 parameters are generated. If you don't do that, the DTSU dialog is going to assume that this is a non-DB2 a program, and there's a good way to check for this. If you use the F10 submit key in this dialog, what you will do is you will generate the JCL that DTSU thinks you want to run. And if you haven't selected the DB2 option as you should, you will not see the keywords that I have in my little example, like the DSN command, the program, the plan, et cetera, et cetera. So that's just a little hint and tip to check yourself if you are debugging with DB2. So let's go on to page 26, please. Just a few more words about DB2. This time we're going to talk a little bit about stored procedures. Again, they're kind of a special case, because with stored procedures, you have a DB2 table called sysroutines. And in the sysroutines table, there's a field called runops. And it's in the runops field that you need to define your test options. And often, when we have customers that are trying to debug a stored procedure, and they say the debug tool isn't starting up for them, one of the first things we want to check is what do they have in their runops. Sometimes they don't have anything, and that's not going to help you either. Other problems to say if they want to debug with remote mode, for example, with the Windows client, they may not have the correct TCP/IP address in there, or they may not have the correct port ID. So that's something to watch out for. I mentioned earlier that you can link an LE exit with a DB2 program to pass the LE parameters, but I want to also warn you that if you do that, that the settings that you have in your exit will take precedence over the settings that you define in the runops field. At the bottom, I just have a quick reminder that when you are starting the WLM address space for your stored procedure, be sure that the steplib also includes the LE library skirun and the debug tool function library seqamod. Okay, now just a few more words about IMS. Let's go on to page 27, please. Okay, this chart really summarizes my previous comments about using the debug tool ship exits if you're running in a non-IMS Plex environment, and using the IMS shift exit, the DFS BXITA, if you're running in an IMS environment. So that's it for the many ways to pass the LE parameters. What we're going to do is we're going to look at some other debugging scenarios and some pitfalls that can happen that can prevent debug tool from starting. So let's move on to page 28, please. Now, in remote mode, the application is started in ZOS and the debug tool interface opens in a GUI, a Windows client. So let's take a look at some things to check if debug tool isn't starting with remote mode. So let's go on to page 29, please. Now, it's very important to use the correct TCP/IP address and port ID in the LE test runtime options when you want to start debug tool in remote mode. Now, sometimes you're not sure, so I provide a couple little hints that you can try. For the TCP/IP address, if you bring up a Windows command prompt and you use the Windows command ipconfig, that will list what the TCP/IP address is for that terminal. Now, if that's the terminal that you want to start debug tool in, then that's the IP address that you need to use. For the port ID, the Windows client is expecting a certain port ID, but to find out what that port ID is, and I use my example with WDDZ because that's currently the client that's supported. There's an under the files pull down, there's an option called preferences. And when you select preferences, you'll see a list of items with plus signs next to them, which means you have to expand them. So what you want to do is select the option called run debug, and that will expand out, and there's an option called debug daemon. And when you look at the various statistics and options shown by debug daemon, one of them will be the port ID. So that's one way that you can check what the port ID is that your Windows client is expecting. I should point out here that the default port ID for WDDZ is 8001. Now, this is changed from the older Windows clients that were shipped with products such as VisualH that used a default of 8000. And sometimes customers will migrate to WDDZ from the older VisualH client, and they'll say, I can't start debug tool. That's one of the things you want to check. So let's move on to page 30, please. I'm going to talk a little bit more about remote mode. Okay, here I've provided an example of the test LE test options using TCP/IP address and the port ID. The main thing I want to point out here is that if you take a look at the syntax of the test runtime option, there are two keywords, VAD TCP/IP and plain TCP/IP. And what happened was that prior to debug tool version 8, VAD TCP/IP was used to designate the older double sockets protocols, and the TCP/IP keyword was used to indicate the single sockets clients. However, starting with debug tool version 8, my understanding is that VAD TCP/IP and TCP/IP both support the single socket interfaces, so they're essentially interchangeable. Okay, now we're going to move into CICS. If we move on, if we would please go to page 31. Okay, again, you need to be sure to specify the correct TCP/IP address and port ID in DTCN and CADP. Additionally, there's also an option called TCP, which I will show more later on, that you need to select. There's also two things in your CICS setup that we want to be sure that you there is a sockets group called DFHSO. You need to install that and enable that into your CICS region. And also there is a sit startup parameter called TCP/IP. You want to make sure that's set to yes in order to debug in remote mode. Okay, let's move on to page 32. Now on page 32 and 33, just like previously, I'm going to talk about the DTCN and CADP dialogues. And mainly I just want to highlight this to you, the fields that you need to set correctly in order to debug in remote mode. There is the TCP option I mentioned to you under session type. That's different from MFI, which is going to be the 3270 interface. And also I want to point out to you that the display ID is where the TCP IP address goes to. There's sometimes a little bit of confusion as to where to specify the TCP IP address. And then if we move on to page 33, I show the CADP example. This example shows the dialogue that you need to display by using the F9 key, set display device. As you can see, the fields, again, are very similar to what we saw in DTCM. Okay, and moving on to page 34. Page 34, just a quick reminder, when you're debugging DB2 stored procedures in remote mode, be sure that the runoffs field in the sysroutines table has the appropriate TCP/IP address and the port ID. Okay, let's move on to page 35, and we're going to talk a little bit about a different kind of remote debugging. Now, the remote 3270 terminal interface manager, in this scenario, the application is started again in a ZOS session, but the debug tool starts in another 3270 terminal session, and there are two flavors of this. What I call the standard remote 3270 interface, you need to specify the LUID in the LE test runtime options of the 3270 where you want the debug tool to start. But for the terminal interface manager protocol, you need to specify the user ID. And we're going to take a look at the syntax of that in just a little bit. So let's move on to page 36 and look at some of the problems that can occur. Now, for this interface, I admit up front that the setup is rather complex. It involves a lot of VTAM and TCP/IP definitions and enablements and configurations and stuff, and it would be another one-hour presentation just to go through that setup. Suffice it to say, though, is that the debug tool customization guide is an invaluable resource for this setup. The section is called Enabling Debugging Through Full Screen Mode through a VTAM terminal, and this section has many very, very detailed step-by-step directions on setting this interface up, and it also has several examples that walk you through exactly what you need to do in order to enable this interface. And quite frankly, a lot of times when customers say, I can't start debug tool up for this interface, we often just walk through line by line this exact section, and often we're able to resolve the problem that way. So let's move on to page 37. Now, again, I'm not going to get into a lot of details, but I just want to highlight to you that to help you set up this protocol, the debug tool ships samples, again, in their data set SEQA SAM, of all the various definitions that you need to do in order to enable this protocol. And these are referred to, again, in the customization guide. When they go through their step-by-step, they say, see this member in order for an example of this. Now, again, after you define all these settings, make sure that you activate them. There are two commands, the very net for the minor nodes and the LU definitions, and then there's very TCP/IP to activate what's called the TM3270 configuration. You got to get these things activated or else they're not going to start. Now, I talked about the syntax. For, again, what I call the standard remote 3270 setup, the keyword is MFI. And you can see at the bottom of my chart here, I have VTEM LUID. That is what you need to specify for this interface, and MFI is the keyword that you need to use. Sometimes when customers are having trouble starting up the debug tool in this interface, sometimes they've used the wrong keyword, and I'm going to point that out later on in my next chart. Or sometimes they're using an LUID that wasn't defined correctly in their configuration, or they misspelled it, et cetera, et cetera. Let's move on to page 38. Now, this is the Terminal Interface Manager. If you just jump down to the bottom, you see that the keyword for this interface is VTAM. It's not MFI, so be very careful to use the appropriate keyword depending on which protocol that you want to use. And again, in my example, I say user ID. That's different from the LU ID, so be very careful about that. And again, at the top, ZBookTool very kindly supplies some configuration samples, again, from its SEQ ASAP data set. Okay, now we're going to move into, if you thought that was complicated, I'm going to move into something that's unfortunately equally as complex in CICS. Let's move on to page 39. CICS multi-region configurations basically consists of multiple CICS regions working together. And as such, there's many, many different scenarios that can be implemented depending on how you configure these various regions. And the customization guide, again, I want to keep trumpeting this document because it's so very, very valuable in these kinds of setups. The customization guide, especially for version 8, has been considerably expanded to describe in minute detail step-by-step instructions for three or four of the most common configurations that we have seen from our ZBookTool customers when they're running in CICS MRO. Let's move on to page 40. And one of the most common configurations involves a terminal owning region, a TOR, and an application owning region, an AOR. Again, there are many, there are variations just on that configuration as well. Again, the customization guide will walk you through that. I want to highlight the program list table program, E-Create00PLT, has a special option called NWP. I think it stands for new program. And what that does is when you define your debugging profile, like in DTCN, the NWP option will help ZBookTool to find that profile in an MRO configuration. And another point I want to point out is the queue, EQA DTCN 2, the debugging queue. Be sure that you define that as remote because you want to be sure that you can share this profile among the different regions. Okay, let's just highlight one more specific scenario on page 41. On page 41, I want to highlight a particularly tricky scenario, and this has to do with debugging a CICS application that doesn't use a terminal. And the points I want to make in this scenario, again, this is very well documented in the customization guide, is sometimes what happens is the ZBookTool has problems finding the terminal where you want it to start on. And there are special exits that are shipped by CICS called XICTENF and XALTENF. That are used to identify terminal for you. Also, be sure to define the CET pound sign transaction as dynamic yes so that you will be able to route to the correct terminal. And also, just a warning, be careful if you specify the terminal ID field in DTC and CADP because you may confuse things, and if you put the wrong terminal ID down, you may not be able to start ZBookTool properly. Okay, on to page 42. Okay, now there is a CICS restriction involving CRTE terminals, and my understanding is that ZBookTool uses the CICS start command in its internal processing, but CICS Start has a restriction involving CRTE terminals. There is one exception, is that if the application and the debug tool share the same terminal as their principal facility, for example, in single terminal mode, then CRTE can be supported. However, if they don't share that terminal, i.e. in dual terminal mode, that scenario is not supported. Okay, let's move on to page 43. And we're going to have a brief word about stored procedures. We talked about this a little bit earlier. Let's move on to page 44. Again, just to make sure that the runoffs field is initialized properly with the various fields that you need, and that the WLM address space contains the load libraries for LE as well as debug tool. Okay, now let's talk a little bit about assembler by moving on to page 45. Now, earlier we talked about being sure that you build the assembler program with the correct options and building the EQA-lang-x file for which contains the debugging data. There are a few restrictions that debug tool is not going to be able to start on, which are by design. And I just want to point those out if we can move on to page 46. Now, with assembler programs, only assembler applications are supported, not like system routines, you know, get main programs, CICS exits, and the like. And also, there's a style of program called private code in which you define a CSEC in your assembler program that doesn't have a name to it. This type of code is not supported by debug tool. We actually don't see too much private code. I haven't seen too much. One of the reasons is that the assembler language reference does try to discourage that because linkers can have a problem with it. Now let's go on to non-LE applications. Let's go on to page 47, please. Non-LE applications, of course, are programs that are built with non-LE-enabled languages such as OSVS COBOL or assembler that doesn't use the standard LE programming conventions. Debug tool can debug these kinds of programs, but there are special considerations that you need to be very much aware of. So let's move on to page 48 and talk a little bit about those. To debug a non-LE application, debug tool uses special facilities that can recognize whether a program is LE or non-LE. One of them is called EQANMDBG. This is a special interface that's used to call a non-LE program. I have a little example in which I'm calling a program called BH1603A. You can see in the second line, the PARM keyword, that I have the program name followed by the test runtime options. There's also a facility called SVC screening, which is it's called screening because it determines whether a program is LE or non-LE enabled. And this facility is activated by using the SVC screen option in the EQA ops module. Now, briefly, the EQA ops module is a special module that contains various debugging options that you want to activate during your debug tool initialization. And I show in my example a little excerpt from the EQA ops module that shows the SVC screen option. Again, this is all described in the debug tool customization guide. There's a whole appendix that will walk you through the various options in there. Now let's move on to page 49. Now, when you are debugging a non-LE application, be sure that you use the load debug data in order to load the information from the EQA-lang-x file. Just a note, if you're debugging an OSVS COBOL or a VS COBOL 2 program that was compiled with no test, debug tool by default will look for the for a data set called userid.eqa-lang-x. So if you don't have a data set by that name, be sure to use the set default listings in order to tell debug tool where to look for the eqa-lang-x file. Also, if your assembler program contains a lot of statically linked CSECs, there's another command called setQualify that's used to tell debug tool, allow debug tool to recognize the CSECs that you have defined. Okay, let's move on to a little bit about CICS on page 50. Okay, in CICS, there's another facility that is used for LE, for non-LE, and this facility can be activated in one of two ways. One of the ways is a transaction called DTCX, and I put the syntax there, DTCXXO to turn them on and XF to turn them off. Also, if you want to enable this non-LE support at CICS initialization, there is, again, a PLT option called NLE, which you can use. Be very careful when you use this because non-LE support can impact performance because it does let add some extra overhead. Now let's continue on page 51, please. Okay, now many programs are interlanguage, for example, COBOL calling assembler or vice versa, and I just want to point out a special restriction that in order to call a non-LE assembler program, it needs to reside on a TIX level boundary, which means, you know, it's the first program in the enclave, or if it's invoked by a CICS link or an XETL command, which also creates a new enclave. On to page 52, a little bit more about CICS. Okay, Devo 2 won't automatically start if the non-LE program is called using the load or call interfaces, and I believe that has to do with the way Devo 2 invokes and returns from programs. Instead, what you need to do is to use the add appearance or the add entry command so that Devo 2 will be able to stop on your program. Okay, well, that's it for CICS. Let's just say a few more words about IMS if we move to page 53. To debug an IMS MPP that does not reside in LE, there's a special setup required. Again, that's all in the customization guide, but I just want to highlight the EQA set transaction, which is involved in the setup. And the reason I highlight that is because that's where you select which debugging mode that you want to use. So if you say, well, I can't start Devo tool in remote mode, and you specify the VTAM mode, it's not going to work. So you want to check that. This is especially important because you don't have the LE test parameter to define these for you. Okay, and finally on page 54, just a quick note. Sometimes customers will encounter problems about starting Devo tool that turn out to be defects in the product. So on page 55, I have put down the main Devo tool URL, and if you click on the support link on the left-hand column, you will be able to get more information about all the latest PTS. And for IBM Link customers, you can download PTS online. So let's summarize on page 56, sorry about that. We've gone through a long list of causes, and I think I'm almost out of time, quite frankly. It's not exhaustive. I haven't told you everything. There's a lot more that can be done, but I wanted to highlight the most common ones. Again, the main URL for our Devo tool main site will give you more information, the documents, as well as the support links will tell you more about these different causes. If you want to email me with additional questions, I put my email address there. If we move on to page 57, 58, WSTE has further resources for additional WebSphere presentations and information. So at this time, sorry, Elijah, I think I only left you 1 minute here, but our moderator would like to provide some special instructions to the audience. So I'd like to turn the meeting back over to Elijah.
Thank you, Thomas, for a great presentation.
Okay. And we'll hear from Janice Winchell with IBM.
Thank you. It's really not a question. I just wanted to make a comment and make clear. On page 20 and 21, when talking about DTCN and CADP, it's extremely important to recognize that test level, when set to all, will cause debug tool to stop every time we hit an exec kicks return or in batch a stop run. One way to change it is to change it on DTCN and CADP. The other way is through EquaOps, and it's referenced in the version 8 manuals, which brings my next point. Get the version 8 manuals, even if you're not on version 8. Lots of new good stuff in there that applies to previous versions. That's it.
Thank you very much, Janice.
Once again, that is star 1 if you have a question at this time. appears we have no further questions.
All right. At this time, we'll conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on the site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Thomas, for presenting today.